One of the things I really, really love to do, both in groups like this and also one-to-one as I meet up with various people during the week, is to create those places where we can talk about aspects of faith, aspects of belief, and so on. And I think one of the things that's really interesting, and I know that there are some people who aren't British here, so my apologies for you, but for those of you who are Brits will understand what I say. When I say in our culture, we have very rightly made faith a personal thing. What you believe is personal to you. You've got to decide it for yourself. And, you know, we generally have a bit of a live and let live approach, you know. But what we've done is we've taken faith being personal and a personal conviction and a personal commitment and your own personal choice, somehow made that private, and in doing so made it secret. And so consequently, I don't know if you've ever had that awkward moment where you try to have a conversation about faith or religion or spiritual things with someone that's not fueled by alcohol at 2 a.m. And it's awkward. And it's really interesting to me that sometimes when I meet up with people who are trying to work out what they think and what they believe for themselves, they will apologize to me over and over and over and over again for offending me. And I'll keep on going, look, you're really not offending me. You're just telling me you don't believe God exists. That's fine. That's really fine. That's not offensive in the slightest. The whole idea of tolerance and the whole idea of mutual respect is that we can think very differently, we can believe very differently, and we don't take offense. And so one of my big ideals for this evening is that we can create that space here, where we can listen to each other, where we can learn to speak about these things with each other. I know for some of us, actually, this is really quite difficult to talk about because of the whole faith equals personal equals private equals secret thing. It means that typically we're not used to having these conversations sober. And secondly, we're not really got those words, that vocabulary, that language to really articulate what we're thinking inwardly. We haven't had that place and that chance and that space to talk about that stuff. And so we can be really articulate about our political beliefs, maybe. Maybe we can talk very strongly about other different ways that we see the world, but when it comes to these questions, we struggle a bit and we feel a bit silly sometimes. And I want to say that tonight, this is a place where there's absolutely no judgment. Tonight, this is a place where you can say whatever you think, you can believe whatever you like, you can say whatever you will, and one, you will not be asked to defend yourself. You won't be asked to produce some airtight reasoning for why you think the way you think and you view the world the way you view. You don't have to defend what you believe. And this is a place where we can ask questions and we can explore together, and it's a safe place to do that, and a place where we can start a sentence and realize the way the sentence is going isn't really what we think at all and change our minds, and that is absolutely fine. So that's what we're trying to do here. That's what I would love to help do here. I hope that you think that you've come to a course on basic Christianity. I've run an awful lot of Alpha courses, and I once got to the end of this talk, and a lady said to me, I've got a question, Kate. When do we get the mobile telephone? And somehow she'd got through the food, she'd got through the welcome, she got through a talk entitled, Who is Jesus? And she still thought she was at the Alpha Telecoms promotional event. She had walked into the wrong building. Our church was unfortunately next door. This is a true, true story. So I hope you all think you're here for a talk on Christianity. Then the first few weeks, we're going to talk about some of the basic aspects of the message of the Christian faith. So this week, we're looking at the question, who is Jesus? Next week, we're looking at the question, why did he die? The week after that, the question, what does it mean to have faith? And after that, we're looking at some of the practicalities of Christian spirituality, Christian worship, Christian life, and Christian practice. So we're asking questions like, how and why do I pray? How and why do I read the Bible? How does God guide me? Those kind of questions. So that's where we're going. But as I said, we're starting with Jesus this evening, because when you're talking about Christianity, he seems like a jolly good place to start. As I was saying, one of my favorite things to do is to meet up with people who are wrestling through questions of belief and trying to work out for themselves what they think and what they believe. And there is usually a fascination with the person of Jesus. Maybe that's self-reinforcing group, because after all, I'm a vicar, so they've come to find a vicar, so maybe, you know, there's something going on there. But people often, they're thinking, firstly, does God exist? And secondly, if God exists, what is he, she, it, or they like? It's one of the sort of basic questions you can ask when you're asking questions about faith. And the very, very simple, very, very succinct Christian answer to that question is, like Jesus. So if you take nothing else home with you about basic Christian doctrine tonight, take that one home, that the basic Christian belief is that if you want to know what God is like, look at the person of Jesus Christ. The well-known Satanist, Marilyn Manson, once sung, but I'm not going to repeat. I haven't quite got the voice to do a Marilyn Manson tribute act from the platform this evening, but says, I want my own personal Jesus, someone who cares, someone who hears my prayers. I want my own personal Jesus, someone who cares, someone who's there. I'm going to reach out and touch faith. Isn't that fascinating? And then the rest of the song, you can see that he's trying to make himself into a Christ figure. Very, very confused man, probably, but a total genius, I think, if you're into heavy metal. But when Marilyn Manson says, I want my own personal Jesus, someone who cares, someone who's there. And if we go to the other extreme, my favorite popular theologian and philosopher, Dolly Parton, said, I've got all I need. I've got Jesus and gravity. If you really want a great thing to watch, go home, have a look on YouTube, look for Jesus and Gravity, Dolly Parton, American Idol 2008, and you see her singing this particular number at Simon Cowell. It's a beautiful thing, I tell you. But when you have such a towering figure in our world, such a towering figure in our society, you know, how many of you have filled in a form this week in which you've put in your date of birth? You've managed to sort of date the date of your birth from the date of his birth, which actually, incidentally, the medieval theologians all got wrong. So we're about 6 years out. But never mind. We just kept on going because it would just be confusing to change once you'd started going. But what about the figure of Jesus? Can we know for certain? And what is a matter of faith? So in your little red books, there are some notes. I am going to warn you now, I'm not really following the notes. But they start on page 12, 13, 14, 15, and so on. So if you get bored with me, have a look at this. It's quite good reading material. I think we're going to start with just some parameters here. And the few parameters are simply this, and I'm going to say them very fast, because I don't want to talk to you for 45 minutes, and you certainly don't want to listen to me for that long, is that there are a few things about Jesus Christ that are not up for reasonable intellectual dispute. And by that I mean, you can try arguing the other way, but you really haven't got any ground to stand on. That's what I mean. And the first is that someone called Jesus existed in first century Palestine. Someone called Jesus existed in first century Palestine. That is really not one of those things that you can debate with any real intellectual integrity. That someone called Jesus definitely existed in first century Palestine. He lived, he taught, he died, he founded a religious movement. Now, that is not just something that the Christians say, that's something that non-Christian classical historians say. And quite frankly, if you want to try and eliminate the existence of this historical human being from the equation, then there's an awful lot of other things that you've got to try and explain away, which are very, very difficult to do so. So that's really not one of those questions that we can really have a sensible conversation about on one level, because the overwhelming evidence of the existence of Jesus Christ as a historical human being who walked around Palestine, regardless of anything else that's said about him, and had a band of followers and founded a religious movement, is one of those things which no serious classical historian would ever dispute. The second thing is that the best and most detailed records of his life are founded in the pages of the New Testament, which is the third, really, of the Bible. Technically, a lot of people call it the second half. It's really the second third if you're going to be precise in terms of content. But in the books called Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, we have a load of copies of John's Gospel at the back. I recommend, seriously, if you're considering Christianity, just read the basic documents. they're probably the best way to go. Pick up one of these, have a read through it. It doesn't take that long. It's not that long. There's loads of margins around the edges here, so it's not even as thick as it looks. The third thing that I think we need to take as a given when we're talking about the historic figure of Jesus of Nazareth is that he is human. Now, I say this, I used to say that very, very confidently at the start of Alpha courses until I had a man in my group who went, but I believe he was an alien who arrived from a spaceship and came to spread the message of the aliens to Earth. And he was serious. And so I've learned that I can't be that confident in assuming that everyone else is going to go, well, of course he was human. Of course he was human. Of course he wasn't some kind of ethereal force, some alien, alien being, some kind of floaty thing. But I figure that people like that particular man are slightly few and far between, so be confident that this figure, Jesus of Nazareth, is human. And this evening, I'm going to say, because I just do believe in being honest and upfront, that I do have an agenda when talking to you tonight. May as well say it. And the agenda is simply this. I want to fascinate you with the person of Jesus. Like, whatever you believe about him, whether you believe he's some kind of wandering teacher, whether you believe he's the Son of God, whether you believe, like that dear man believed, that he is an alien who got stranded on this planet from far, far away. I want you to be absolutely fascinated by him and with him. I'm going to look at some of the things that Jesus said according to John's Gospel on page 15. I'm just going to say this very, very quickly. I'm going to skirt over it. And I am going to say this, that this diagram here that talks about ancient writings is grossly oversimplified and not that honest. Okay, this is, there's some Christians make big mistakes and they pass on things and they become urban legends. And unfortunately, this diagram is one of those things. Now, there's an awful lot of truth to the diagram, as in that the New Testament was, the copies of the New Testament you can find much earlier than comparative other ancient literature. But it's not exactly fair in the number of copies that it compares. However, I don't mean to land this on you, but we do have a classical archaeologist sat right over there. Wave your hand, please, Antonia. And I'm sure she will tell you, as most of the time I'm working with postgrad students, so I'm used to having to deal with this kind of stuff, so that's why I'm saying this now. But classical historians, even those who don't own a faith at all, will tell you that the confidence in the text of the New Testament now as we have it is what was back then, is absolute. It's absolute. It's undisputed. It's unless you want to be one of those people that disputes whether Pride and Prejudice now is what was Pride and Prejudice in the 19th century and so on. That's the sort of argument you're going to be having. But there is a fun thing there. The question, I guess, when it comes to the New Testament is, this is what was written, but do you believe it? You know, just because it was written doesn't mean you have to believe it, right? But I'm just going to go on that assumption for the moment. And the first thing I want to say is that Jesus said some pretty outrageous things according to the New Testament. His teaching almost entirely centered on himself. So we think about Jesus as this, I guess in popular culture, as someone who reaches out and is generous to others, who is kind to others, who sees the needs of others. And yet when he speaks, it's striking as you read the New Testament, that he refers to himself an awful lot. And the first thing that I'm going to look at of him saying this evening is he makes this claim, I am the bread of life. Now, I think that's an incredibly odd thing to claim. It's the sort of thing that Christians or people who become Christians after a while go, that's a really nice thing. And no one really has the courage to go, but what on earth does it mean? I am the bread of life. I mean, seriously, that's odd. And I think as Jesus is saying this to his to the people that he's talking to, what he's saying is, I am the one that brings you satisfaction. He's saying, I am the one who gives you the very necessities of life. Now, you've got to sort of work with me here and imagine you're in a time machine and traveling back 2,000 years to ancient Palestine. And you realize there's no room for people to say they're gluten intolerant. because bread is mostly what you're going to be eating. And when the meat you have to raise yourself. You eat dramatically less of it than we do now. You know, if you've got to grow your own chicken, raise your own chicken, kill your own chicken, you're going to eat less chicken, right? I mean, sounds to reason, doesn't it? So we've got to remember how much bread these people ate. It was a lot. I am the bread of life. I'm a constant presence. And then I do wonder, and I mean, I appreciate that this might be stretching biblical knowledge a little bit, but it's really interesting that there are points in the Old Testament where God works an act of deliverance and rescue for his people, and he gives people very, very strict instructions regarding bread. And you think, why on earth, if God exists and made the heavens and the earth and everything else, would he be so worked up about bread? I mean, really, far more important things going on, Lord. But somehow these things are there. So you see this actually in the Jewish tradition still when they celebrate Passover and they have to get rid of all the yeast from their houses. I don't know how many people are familiar with that tradition in the Jewish culture, and they have unleavened bread. And it goes back to the story, and you can, again, while you're looking at Dolly Parton singing to Simon Cowell, maybe you can find a copy of The Prince of Egypt as well, which has an awesome Whitney and Mariah duet. And it tells the story of essentially the book of Exodus, which is right at the start of the Bible, and it talks about how God brings his people out of slavery in Egypt into the promised land. And the night before they leave, and their last night as slaves, he tells them to make bread without yeast in it. And then through the desert, they're provided with bread that keeps them alive. And then Jesus arrives and says, I am the bread. So I think Jesus is also reaching back into it. Because remember, Jesus was Jewish. Okay, Jesus was not blonde, blue-eyed, and sort of Northern European. Jesus is Middle Eastern. We forget that because of bad religious art. It has a lot to answer for. And Jesus says, I am the bread of life. That's actually quite an outrageous thing to say. I'm the fulfillment of all of that things from our people's heritage. I'm a constant presence in your life. I am a necessity of your existence, and I will provide your satisfaction. Ooh, if I said that tonight about me, what would you think of me? Interesting question. Secondly, Jesus says, I am the light of the world. And there's an absolutely wonderful painting in Keble College Chapel just up the road that is called Jesus, the Light of the World. And we'll look at it in a couple of weeks' time together, maybe. And it was the painter painting a picture of what he thought this meant. When Jesus says, I am the light of the world, he says, you will no longer walk in darkness, you will have the light of life. He's assuming that people who don't know him somehow are living without light. That's actually, again, quite an outrageous thing to say. I am the light of the world, not just the light of these people here, not just the light of this city, not just the light of this particular group, of this ethnic group, but I am the light of the world. He's talking about being direction and purpose and guidance and enlightenment. And again, oh my goodness, how do we match those words, which actually seem very harsh, very direct, which challenge some of our culture deeply? We think sometimes we find those kind of assertions offensive. It might answer some of the questions why in the Gospels, it talks in these Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, there's accounts of Jesus saying things like that, and it says the people tried to stone him. He's saying things which are deeply, deeply challenging to the way that we view the world. Finally, he said this, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. I think if you wanted to sum up a rough translation of the verse, he's saying, I'm the bridge from you to God. I'm the bridge from you to God, and in fact, I'm the only bridge from you to God. And I'm going to show you the way. And again, if I said that tonight about myself, you would rightly think I was a nutcase. quite rightly think I was a nutcase. But it's not things like that, just things like that that we actually find quite difficult to read and quite difficult to think about. And I'm throwing those out because I'm really hoping it will provoke some discussion in your group. I deliberately chose the provocative ones because I thought, hey, we need to get some conversation going here. And there's nothing quite like saying something really provocative to get some conversation going. But the things that Jesus said that often we just think are nice were the most outrageous of all back when he said them. So Jesus says to a man who is paralyzed, he reaches out his hand, and the first thing he tells him before he heals this man is he says, your sins are forgiven. Now, Voltaire, the French philosopher, anyone here studying French literature at university? None, okay. Voltaire's one of the set texts. Voltaire said this, I'll just say it in English, he said, God will forgive me, it's his job. God will forgive me, it's his job. And actually, for us, in 21st century Britain, when we hear the words Jesus saying to someone, your sins are forgiven, even though we might rumple at the sense of sin, even though we might not know quite what that means, we quite like the idea of forgiveness because that's God's job and he does it. But for first century Jews, that was an absolutely outrageous thing to say because that's precisely the issue. It's God's job. So who on earth is Jesus claiming to be? A good Jewish rabbi never, ever, ever had teaching that was centered on themselves. It was never about them. A good Jewish rabbi would say, as Rabbi so-and-so said, quoting Rabbi so-and-so, quoting Rabbi so-and-so, and eventually you'd get back to the Holy Scriptures, and then you would have whatever theological truth or philosophical truth needed to be expounded. You would quote someone else, who'd quote someone else, who'd quote someone else, explain someone else, and eventually you would get your chain of authority back to God. That's how it worked. And what Jesus is doing is he's missing out that entire chain and saying, but I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, to quote a very famous quotation of Christ's. But I tell you, I am the way, the truth, and the life, not explaining all of this. So we kind of lose that a little bit in our cultural translation. And what do we do with this? It would have been the easiest thing in the world, as I said, to present a picture of baby Jesus, meek and mild, this evening. But as I said, we want a place of discussion here. We want to wrestle with some things that actually often don't sit comfortably with us. When we look at Jesus' life, do we see a megalomaniac, crazed person? Or do we see the person who spends time with the least and those that are right on the margins of society and those who seem far from any form of loving kindness and reaches out to them? What do we do with a character of someone who people through the millennia have found compelling, whether or not they would call themselves Christians? There's plenty of people in this world who find Jesus as an inspirational figure who don't call themselves Christians. What do we do with that character of life that intrigues people to want to know his teaching, even if they don't accept traditional Christian theology about the belief surrounding who he is? What do we do with that character? Do we set it aside when we look at these things? Or do we read these things and go, well, but if he's telling the truth, is that consistent with his character? What do we do with his fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy? Now, I've already quoted a foremost Satanist and a country and Western singer tonight, so I feel I'd be like going a little on thin ice if I threw in Tim Minchin. But if anyone's heard the Tim Minchin Good Book song, because the good book says it's good, like a good book says it should. We have to remember that the Old Testament was written a long, long time before the New Testament. It was in existence when Jesus walked on this earth. And so there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these old prophecies that are fulfilled in Jesus' life. Now, some of them, I agree, in the style of Monty Python, he could have manipulated to appear and take a claim as sort of some kind of messianic figure, just as many others had done before him. But others are kind of harder to manipulate, such as the time and place of your birth or the time and place of your death. They're a little bit harder to manipulate. And finally, what do we do with the claims that he rose from the dead? Now, I'm a very simple bear with very little brain. I'm like the daft one of my family, basically. When people meet my family, they go, yeah, that's really true, Kate. You're actually really quite thick. And the way I look at it is simply this. If Jesus is who he says he is, then it's not only entirely possible, but entirely probable that he rose from the dead. If he's not, then of course it's absolutely stupid and a ridiculous fantasy to say that someone can come back from having been dead for 3 days in a tomb, of course. But the question comes back to, is he actually who he says he is? So I've talked enough at you. It's time for you to talk to each other. As I said, I've deliberately in this talk gone the route which hopefully provokes questions. So I've deliberately pushed one particular view, as you probably would have guessed. But this is so that you have something to tussle with and grapple with, right? I think I always find it easier to tussle and grapple with something that's kind of definitely there rather than try and deal with nuances in the middle. And some questions to kick you off in your groups could be things like, who have you always imagined Jesus to be? Maybe you have always imagined him with long, blonde, wavy hair, blue eyes, a sparkling white robe, doves on his shoulders, and a lamb on the other shoulder where there's no doves. Maybe not. Who would you want him to be? So if you... You know, I kind of know sometimes what we actually think and where we actually believe, and then where what we actually want to think and what we actually want to believe are two quite different things. But who would you want him to be, even if you don't believe he's that at all? What surprises you about Jesus? I've picked just a few things that he taught from the long, long list there. There's a whole list of others. I'm sure your group leaders will go through some of those if you want them to. So, who have you always imagined Jesus to be? Who would you want him to be? What surprises you about him? And finally, as I said, my agenda all along was just to fascinate you about this character because I find him absolutely intriguing. I find him absolutely intriguing. I just can't quite get my head around him. And that's why I think this is my recommendation of a read. It's available at the back. We've got a bookstore that's actually a library. So we've just got a stack of books on there that we think you might find helpful. If you think you're going to find them helpful, take one, write your name in the notebook, bring it back next week if it's really not useful, bring it back in 2 weeks if you found it really great. But this is what I'd recommend. Engage with the original sources and have some fun as well. Please, talking about religion doesn't have to be boring. We can have some fun.